Right, Chris, thanks very much for doing this, mate. I really appreciate it. Just to put you on a downer before we start, I've been told a couple of times that I look a bit like you.
Really?
Like a homeless Chris Commons.
I'll take that.
Happy with it?
Yeah.
But having seen you in real life, you're much cuter, mate.
Oh, thank you. It's the makeup.
What's happening with you? How's the back?
Back is all right, yeah. I had an operation probably 4.5 months ago. Prior to that 12 months, I had 4 epidurals.
Wow.
So it's been a bit of a rough road, but Celtic have been kind enough to let me train at Lennox Town, use their facilities, use their physiotherapists and things like that. So that's been really good. Then my kids all came down with chicken pox. So for 2 weeks, I literally did nothing. Then I went away to Marbella, got some sun. And since then, mate, I've literally just been playing badminton. So
brilliant, living the dream, eh? Well, I think it's time for you to go part-time, mate, Peterhead.
Yeah?
One night a week, mate. Pick you up at Cumbernauld.
I need some runners.
Right, I'll run for you, mate. I'll just give you the ball. We'll just start off in your early days playing football. What was your upbringing like as a boy? Was it football all the time?
Football all the time, yeah. And I probably took for granted back then that I had parents that literally did everything for me to go and play football. And I think being a father now, I don't think I'd have that sort of dedication to my kids at 10, 11, what my parents had for me. So I think not only a massive credit to mum and dad what they did do, but in terms of the places they had to drive to take me to play football, the sacrifices they had to make, and also probably juggle 2-3 jobs each in a week, as well as obviously I had a brother and sister just a little bit younger than me. So yeah, they gave me, without that, the best opportunity to become a footballer.
What was coaching like when you were younger, when you first went into a professional club? We've had a few boys on, we've asked them the same question. Do you feel like kids now are overcoached?
Again, difficult. You see, when I was a young kid, all I wanted to do was just play football. Whether I was getting coaching at the time, I don't know. I just wanted to impress. My sole aim was, when I went to football, was to be the best in the group or score the most goals in the group. I always wanted to be the one that people were talking about. Or that little lad there, he's decent. I always wanted to hear people talking about me. So that was my motivation in terms of impressing. Coaching wise, again, I were always playing above, a year, 2 years above myself. So even though I was quite small, I was always playing with much bigger lads just because I was technically better than the kids that I was playing with. So it was, I don't know, coaching, I don't know, I just wanted to enjoy my football.
But when you went in a professional club, you being a creative player, did they try and take that out of you, or was that encouraged?
I went to Stoke City, yeah, and they put me at left back straight away.
Oh, really? Yeah. Graveyard shift.
Yeah, but no, I went to, it was a learning curve because I was one of the youngest in my group. So I went to Stoke City, I was 15 years old, left home, about to turn 16 year old, you know, didn't have a car, no money. Them days, £45 a week was like a 20 grand a week. Do you know what I mean? You thought you had everything. It was brilliant. But yeah, moved away from home. And again, coaching side of things was a good learning curve for me, being along the back four or as a wing back, because it gave me the opportunity to kind of see the game in front of me, which then I think developed me then of what sort of passes I wanted to receive, what sort of angles I needed to move. And especially like getting the ball off a left back, it made perfect sense for me to move either side of midfielders. So I think in the early days, that was probably one coaching point that I took and enhanced into my own game.
But did you always see yourself playing in that hole that you played in?
No, not really, no. I'll tell you, the first time I played in that kind of role was, it was Derby against Man U.
Right?
Yeah.
Right in the deep end?
Right in the deep end, yeah. And we just got rid of our manager, Paul Jewell. We had a caretaker manager in there, and a youth team coach came in, and they said, right, we're going to be pretty defensive, we're not going to play two up front, we're going to play like a bit of a 4-5-1, but we want you just to try and get in little spaces and work off big Robles. So obviously a big guy, me and him, ended up having an half-decent partnership. But it's the first time that I've actually got the ball from an inside right position, and I was in a perfect little pocket in between the midfield and, I'll say, in between Paul Scholes and Vidic.
Right, decent.
I thought, you know what, I'm just going to have a little shot here. And then I didn't get closed down, I didn't get pressed, so I thought, you know what, have another little touch. And then it just opened up for me, and I, bang, goal. And I thought, you know what?
I'll take this every week.
Every week, yeah. And it's amazing how many times, obviously, I got in that area and scored goals in that exact same position.
See, the type of player you are, like a creative sort of player. Why do you think that us in Scotland didn't produce a lot of them?
Good question. I don't know. I think it's in your DNA. It's in your blood, yeah. But I think it's, I wouldn't say intelligence in terms of educational side of things. I think it's intelligence on the park and in, on the pitch. You have to know what's around you. You have to know everything I got taught probably between 15 and 20 was always be, you know, two touch, get your head up, always know what you're going to do with the ball before you've even got it. Mm-hmm. So that just makes you, you're always constantly looking, always constantly looking for space, constantly looking where you can obviously hurt defenders. And I think that was just not so much drilled into me and this is what you've got to do. I just find that if I can do that, then I can be an half-decent player. Mm-hmm. In terms of Scotland producing players of that magnitude, I think, you know, I think it comes in roundabouts. I think if you look at Kieran Tierney, it's been a while since we've produced that sort of talent. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. It comes round in roundabouts.
But I mean, Tierney's a brilliant player, obviously, mm-hmm. hard worker. But I mean, those flair players, you know, we've had Faddy, Yassel, those, but coming around very, very rarely, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you know what? I don't even think that it's just a Scotland thing. I think it's very difficult to try and. They're the hidden gems, aren't they?
Gems, yeah.
You know, like, I don't know, Eden Hazard, you know, that sort of player. Uh-huh. People that really, really do cause a lot of problems for defenders and being in that no man's land. And, you know, I would never blessed with blistering pace or great strength, but what I could do was use my intelligence on the park to get in positions that cause defenders problems. So I just use that to my advantage.
So as you say, you were started at Stoke and then joined Nottingham Forest. How did that come about?
Tony Pulis was the manager at Stoke at the time, and, you know, knowing Tony Pulis and how he played and, you know, the sort of players that he had in the team at the time, you know, we had Gifted Noel Williams, Akin Baye, Jerry Taggart. So we were blessed with huge physical guys, not a lot of football, quite direct, you know, Monday to Friday training was a lot of set pieces, a lot of team shape where you're working and, you know, running in behind. And I thought, you know what, for an attacking player, one that thought he had a little bit of flair, I thought, you know, my career needs to go elsewhere. I need to go and try and play football. Mm-hmm. So yeah, at the time, Andy Reid was supposedly going to from Nottingham Forest to Tottenham Hotspur. Nottingham Forest wanted a winger. I thought, you know, it's a perfect opportunity for me to do that.
And obviously, under Pulis, was he quite happy for you to go?
No, he wanted me to stay. They tried to keep me there. I just thought from a development in terms of, like I said, playing football and giving me the best chance to play football. Nottingham Forest were a great breeding ground for players. You know, we think Jermaine Genus, Andy Reid, you know, Keith Foyer, Michael Dawson, uh-huh. David Prutton, all these players that came through the academy that we played against in youth football, they were all top footballers and went on to have great careers. So I wanted to try and be a part of that.
And did you take to first team football straight away? Did you love it going to Forest?
You know what? Going to Nottingham Forest was like a bit of a dream come true, because I was, as a kid, 7, 8, 9 years old, I was a junior red. So, right. You know, my heroes as a real young kid was Ian Wone, Stuart Pearce, Des Walker, Terry Sheringham. They yeah. were people that I grew up watching as a young kid in Nottinghamshire. But the reality was I went there and it was a bit of a nightmare. Joe Kinnear was the manager. There was things that weren't right off the park. There were things on the park that weren't going well. We had a tour of America and I don't think we won one game. We came back, we literally got off to the worst start ever. We were involved in a relegation battle from early on. I found it hard to get in the team. We had players in the team that were getting old and that weren't good enough. Went through a good few managers and then Gary Megson came in to try and revamp us and yeah, we ended up getting relegated.
And were you wanting to leave straight away? As soon as the relegation happened, did you want to leave?
No, I stayed there for 3-4 years.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, I was part of the team that got unpromoted. But during that year, contract negotiations were stood still. They said that they weren't going to offer me a contract, said that I'd have to wait until the end of the season. I was on a Bosman, I was on a free. So I just thought, you know, being one of their main players, scored one of the, you know, most of the goals that season. Mm-hmm. They'd have given me a contract if they wanted to keep me between January and the end of the season. That never arised. Funny story, we got promoted on the last day of the season, and the season before that, we got beat in the semi-final of the playoff mm-hmm. by Yeovil. So the season after, we thought, right, listen, we want to get automatic promotion, you get an extra couple of weeks off and all that sort of. So anyway, we got promoted. All the guys chipped in, the chairman says, right, listen, we're going to take to Marbella. So we're in this pool party at Marbella. And Colin Calderwood came over, sunglasses on, booze in his hand. He went, right, I'm going to sort this contract out.
With the trunks on, the bungee sunglasses.
Yeah. I says, Colin, it's already sorted. I didn't think he wanted me, yeah. But he was like, where are you going? I said, I can't tell you. I said, but you'll find that soon enough.
And he was your manager, eh?
Yeah. So, yeah.
And the move was Derby.
It was Derby, very controversial, yeah. Yes, it was. It wasn't my first choice, I must admit. But I went through a family tragedy that year. Obviously, you know, my missus gave birth to a stillborn baby girl. So we went through, that year was pretty bad for us in terms of, obviously, Lisa, loss of a baby. Mm-hmm. Trying to sort my contract out, got the high of getting promoted, but then I had a decision to make. Where do we go? Where do we go and play football? I had an option to go and play in London, but I just thought it was, you know, I needed Lisa to be in and around a family. I needed her to obviously be near her mum, grandma, all the mates and things like that with what I'd just gone through over the last 4 or 5 months. So, you know, I chose Derby because it meant that I could go and play football and still be in the area for Lisa.
And how did the Derby fans take to you?
Derby was great. Proper family club, loved it there. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Felt I had a point to prove because I came from Nottingham Forest, but I weren't the first to do it. I weren't the last. So, you know, obviously Nottingham Forest fans were bitterly disappointed, probably rightly so. You know, it's not the sort of move that you want to be making to make friends. But I just thought it was a move that they just got relegated from the Premier League. They were spending quite a bit of money. They were getting some decent players in, and I thought, you know what, they're going to have a real good crack at
going back up.
Yeah, so it made sense from a football point of view and a family point of view. Nottingham Forest just got promoted from League One, so I just thought it was the better option.
And how was the reception when you went back to Forest?
Yeah, nightmare. Yeah, yeah.
Bit of abuse to her.
Yeah, loads of abuse. Yeah.
And did that bother you now? Just got on with it.
You have to, don't you? You have to. Yeah. I mean, the home and away got abused, but I mean, it's just part and parcel of football. I think if you ain't got thick enough skin to play football, then you, especially for that sort of stuff, you shouldn't be in the game.
How big is that rivalry compared to, say, obviously, Celtic and Rangers?
Down in England, it's a big deal. You know, like probably a Birmingham Villa sort of thing.
Right, okay.
But it's Mickey Mouse compared to up here.
Is it really?
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing like a Rangers. There's nothing compares to it. But I suppose them sort of games, especially away from home, set me up for the sort of abuse and the pressures that it put you under playing
up here.
Yeah.
Obviously done really well at Derby. Mm. Were you keen to leave as soon as interest started coming?
Yeah, you know what? I didn't want to leave Derby. I really didn't want to leave. Loved it. Right. Like I say, I was in and around the area. I thoroughly enjoying it. It was a really good time to play for Derby. We'd done well in cup games. We were doing all right in the league, about 9th, 10th, but you know it's like in the Championship, you're a couple of wins off playoffs. Mm-hmm. We had a good, strong squad. And everything was going great. And I can remember Cluffy called me in one day and he said, right, son, he said, we need to sort this contract out. I said, right, okay. And I felt really intimidated because I thought, I've heard a lot about Nigel Clough, that he'll sit you down and there's your contract, sign it. And he's put pressure on players, especially from lower league, that they will just sign it without an agent. And he says, right, I've got a... Let's get his contract sorted out, sort of thing. I'm like, okay. Thinking, oh my God, don't give me a contract. What's going to happen here? And he said, I've been thinking. He says, I know that's what you're earning right now. He says, there's your new contract. And then I read through it and I went, it's a wage decrease. He's wanting me to take a wage cut.
No way.
I've only got 6 months left on my contract. I said, wait. I said, this is saying I'm taking a wage cut. He went, yeah, but if you take a wage cut, it means I can go and get better players and then we'll be better. I went, can I get back to you? And I was like, so I rang me out. I said, I've just had a really awkward conversation with Cluffy. I said, he's wanting me to take a wage cut and make it up in bonuses that's never going to happen sort of thing. You know what I mean? And I thought,
take
right,
one for the team.
Yeah, he says, right, I tell you what I'll do. I'll come in. And then I can remember me and my agent, we sat down with Cluffy. He says, listen, I really want to get it sorted out. And he said, just tell me what you want. Tell me what you want and then I'll get it sorted. So, okay, so I give him a figure. And Cluffy, literally, as soon as I mentioned the figure, he stood up, shook me and went, well, we can't do that. Thanks very much. And then left. I was like, I want to stay. Why can't I have that? Yeah, so that's how that came about. So the negotiations went on for another 4 or 6 weeks. And you know, we were getting close. I thought, you know, it's going to be sorted. Everything's going to be hunky-dory. Went training one day, end of January, still thinking everything was going to get sorted. And then the chairman called me in. And he says, we've just accepted a bid off Celtic. You can get your stuff, go and have your medical. Just like that, I'm on a plane the next day.
Just before we go on to say, like, what was Clough like every day? Was it was similar to his dad? Was he quite off the cuff?
I never met his dad. Yeah, very off the cuff. I wouldn't say Nigel is a coach.
Right.
He liked natural players. I think being a natural player, in terms of never had blistering pace, but naturally gifted. Mm-hmm. He found it difficult to try and coach, if that makes sense.
Right, okay.
So people that weren't quite up to it, he found it very difficult.
Right. Why do you think that was? Just because he
played himself? I don't think he's just a little bit naive, yeah. I think working with the likes of Neil Lennon and especially Brendan Rodgers has made me realise that you can be a manager, everyone can be a manager, but you've got to be a coach. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
You've got to make your players better.
You've got to make your players better. You've got to be tactically better. But in terms of just having a laugh, I mean, we had a dressing room with some good characters, Robbie Savage being one. Mm-hmm. But we went on like a 6-7 game losing streak. And the defenders, Sean Barker, our captain at the time, and he says, listen, we really need to, like, to the man, we really need to work on set pieces. We need to defensively do it. And Cluffy, like, tried to make a mockery of him on the training ground, just saying, okay, right, you mark me. Is that too hard to understand? And Barker's like, well, listen, Gaff. He went, right, just whip the ball in. Okay, Sean, are you okay? Listen, I'm your man, are you okay?
Oh, that is brilliant.
And Barks was like, right, okay. And then Barks edited it, he went, see, is that too hard? Do you understand? He went, that's your man, that's your man, that's your man. Pick him up. If they score, it's your fault sort of thing. But Barks just wanted a bit of, I don't know, a bit of leadership, a bit of coaching or some sort of organisation, which we just clearly didn't have. So anyway, went for all that. The next day, we came into training thinking, what's going to be happening here? This is ridiculous. I came through that. I can remember going through the gates and then the groundsman was cutting out a full cricket wicket in the middle of the training ground. Into the training. And we're all sat there and Bing Crosby walked in, not the Bing, but, you know, Crosby. He walked in with these huge bikes. He went, boof. He says, right, guys, he says, you not need your boots today. He says, we're going to have a game of 2020, right? And we opened up and they were full, like full gear, gloves, boxers, compos, and we had a full 2020. There's your teams. And we went and did that and we were thinking it was going to be like a couple of hours. Nah, we were there 2:30 in the afternoon, still flying down, pitching balls in.
Oh, brilliant.
But yeah, that was, but that kind of changed. I wouldn't say changed the season, but it lined up everyone's kind of thought process.
Was there other incidents with it? Did he enjoy it? Was he a partial to a game of cricket then? Uh-huh.
Loved his cricket. You know what? I think his goalkeeping coach, Martin Taylor, he was involved in a weekend cricket club. But Cluffy, yeah, he could hurtle down that seam, bang him in. But we did a pre-season in Loughborough. And you know what, pre-seasons were really hard, but it was so old school, Cluffy, where we'd be running around golf courses and parks and, you know, I went and did the Derby Forest game for Sky, and the amount of parks I passed and thought, oh my God, I've done a pre-season in there. it was nuts, but the best one has to be at Loughborough. And we did a bit of a triathlon, so we did swimming, and we had to, like, bricks on the bottom of the pool and swim with bricks on the pool and running around the track, and then we did rowing on the side of the pool. And then after we'd done that, he says, right, I've got a treat for you now, cricket. Oh my God. Do you know what I mean? Get my ball to shred, he's like, that's his name. But we said, right, okay, cricket. But it weren't just cricket, because then all the coaches bought these big cool boxes full of iced beers. So there's me and big Stephen Pearson, we're having a few beers, getting his pads on, getting things box sorted out, like thinking, right, we've got to put a good innings in here. Just as this happening, Clough has come hurtling down the wicket, and he could bowl, you're like, decent. But Stephen Bywater's in the slips, so he's gone to catch it, who's our number one goalkeeper, and his thumb pops out of its socket, so he's gone, my thumb, it's out. So this physio's gone flying across the wicket, and Cluffy, like, just pop it back in, you'll be fine, come on, you'll be fine. Got a game of cricket to crack on with here. So anyway, yeah, full 2020 again, another couple of hours, and then we went back to the hotel and had a full barbecue set up, and this weren't chicken and kebabs things, this was full
burgers
and sausages, yeah, full it with beers, yeah, so wonder why, that was the blueprint, the DNA for this, I think.
You've just carried that on ever since.
Absolutely, yeah.
How did guys like Robbie Savage, who'd played in the Premier, what did he think of it?
He just thought, Sav were all up for that.
Was he? Was he a good guy? Yeah.
Sav, yeah. I don't think I've ever met anyone like Sav. Proper decent guy. Yeah.
Is he?
And he's so funny. Like when you see him on TV now, he's trying to be a bit more professional, a little bit more But yeah, if you get him on your own, he's some guy, some laugh. But it was, like I said, it was a great time at Derby. Really enjoyed it. Yeah, it was just, for me, it was just about playing and enjoying my football, but you know, not really being with a top coach kind of made me a bit more tunnel vision in terms of, it's just like being a kid again, just enjoying my football. But yeah, when you obviously with like Neil Lennon and Brendan Rodgers, it gives you a completely different outlook in terms of tactical awareness, knowledge of the game, being a player, and then the transition of being a player into a coach.
So you said that obviously the chairman came to me and said Celtic wanted you. Did you know much about the Scottish game?
No.
Did you fancy it straight away, or did it take you a while to come around to the idea?
No, I fancied it straight away. My agent rang me up. It had been maybe a week just before, saying that they'd come down and watch me play. They were interested there. But there were no signs of them coming in January. This was going to be end of season, free transfer sort of thing. And I can remember watching the Rangers-Celtic game, you know, the one where George Osama scored?
Yeah.
That's the game that I watched. And I thought, you know what?
Fancy this.
Yeah, that was wet my whistle, yeah. So I spoke to big Kelvin Wilson, who was joining as well. Uh-huh. Yeah, and then obviously Neil Lennon, that I'd played with at Nottingham Forest. So yeah, when I got the phone call, I thought, right, okay. But my missus was pregnant with William, and we had a little girl as well, so it was
big move.
It was like, right, darling, let's get your bags packed, let's go.
And was she happy with it?
Yeah, says it's time to stop wearing it Primark. So let's go and get some Louboutins.
Obviously, you said you played well in it at Forest. What was he like as a player? You hard, didn't he?
As a player, you know what? When he came to Nottingham Forest, he was finished. He was done.
Putting it nicely here.
You know, one thing that Neil, obviously, he never had any pace, but what he realised probably from me is when he had the ball, I was one that was coming in and making little angles and trying to play football, whereas we weren't blessed with great footballers in the team. So whether he just noted that and said, you know what, he's all right, he can go and play at the next level. But we're playing in League One, and Neil had a few incidences up north of the border and down south, and yeah, he was missing training, weren't enjoying it. He was away from the family. And I think it was a big reality check in terms of him, where his career was. I think he would have been like 34, 35 at the time. But I think 6 months prior to that, he was playing AC Milan.
I think he found that quite difficult at her.
Yeah, and then Tuesday night, 7:45, kick-off against Luton and Yeovil. Yeah, it's just, he just thought, you know what? And he didn't need the money. It weren't like a... But I think it's just reality at home, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to get back up to Scotland and do some coaching.
Did you used to hit it off when he was there? Is that maybe a reason why he came for you?
I wouldn't say, you know what, I can't even remember like day to day. He used to come in with some of the worst gear I've ever seen. And all the young...
Big leather jackets.
And all the young lads, yeah, all the young lads would give him some abuse. But he's just an angry, angry man. And I can remember he came in this black M5. BMW. Uh-huh. I love the note that was. I had like a 320 diesel, 5-door thing. Looked like I've been driving 60 years. And I said, that must be fast. He says, yeah, this key's going to take it for a spin. Just like,
none.
Right, okay. So me and the lads, yeah. Me and Big Wes Morgan got in the car, went flying down the A52 and then come back. It's like he just didn't care. Uh-huh. Like football and just lost his head.
Was Rangers in for you as well when Celtic wanted to take you? Was there a wee bit of interest for Rangers?
There were interest, yeah, but they didn't have any money. I think they would have maybe thought about it at the end of the year, but it weren't... I never had a conversation with my agent saying, you've got the choice of two, or Rangers are in for you. It was just like, I've spoke to Celtic, Rangers are interested. You know, it went through, you know what it's agents like. Villa's interested, West Brom, Sunderland. You know what I mean? You get all these things. But unless someone makes a phone call, which Celtic did, agreed a £300,000 fee, and that was me up the road the next day.
Obviously, being fed down south, did it surprise you how big a club Celtic was when you first got up here?
Yes. It was difficult for me to try and get so quickly, because I think in my first two games, one was at Hampden, and that was a weird atmosphere because it's always Persian.
Miles for the pitch. Yeah.
So that weren't great. And then my next game next year it might have been Ibrox.
Oh.
So, yeah, Ibrox.
Had you experienced anything like that before, no?
No, but, you know, because I was new and fresh, no one knew who I was. Mm-hmm. So I think that went in favour for me, because once they know who you are, they'll slaughter you.
Uh-huh.
Whereas I just slipped under the radar. But then my home debut was Rangers at home.
60,000 to your house. Uh-huh.
And that's when I thought, this is it. Uh-huh. This is the creme.
You made your debut against Aberdeen, the League Cup semi-final it was,
yep.
And scored a lovely wee
chink.
Uh-huh, did you mean it?
Yeah.
Uh-huh, definitely. Yeah. Didn't they keep it off the line? Uh-huh.
Ooh, Langers. Uh-huh. Right, yeah. He was fuming as well. Fuming. But yeah, it's... if you ask any Celtic player in training, I'm the only one that can probably... I think I'm the only one that's chipped Craig Gordon from about 4 yards.
Really?
Yeah, nah. But yeah, no, I think it's... You've either got the one, haven't you? Well, you haven't.
Oh, you've not, huh?
Right, but training were regular.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You scored this barrel load in the second half of that season. Yep. Did it suit you playing with better players?
Yeah, well, you know what? Coming from Derby, I think I was up to... Yeah, January when I left, I was up to like 14, 15 goals for Derby as well.
Right.
So it just carried on. Obviously, debut scored, Ibrox scored, home debut scored, and it was just a continuous, yeah. But I think we lost, I don't know if we lost a point on that season.
Uh-huh.
Rangers beat Kilmarnock 4-5-0, 4-0 at about half time, but we lost the title literally on one point. And that was kind of the most disappointing I've ever felt in football.
Obviously, you said there was good players at Derby, like Savage and the captain, Barker, but was it a step up in quality? And how big was the step up?
It was just a gulf.
Was
the
it?
Gulf, yeah. You know what championships
and what,
like?
And training and standard of player?
Both. Right. Both, yeah. Yeah.
And did that suit you better, playing with better players, do you think?
Yeah. You have to raise your game, else you're going to get left behind.
Uh-huh.
So I felt like I was in good form, felt fit. There's nothing better when you play for a new club and you get, you know, when you don't really know that many people in the dressing room, that you want, the only thing that you can try and win them over with is how good you're playing or if you're scoring goals.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I did both pretty quickly, which then you just become part of the family. But I think coming from Derby, you came from a very, very competitive league where every single game was tight,
mm-hmm.
whereas up here we were considerably better than pretty much everyone.
It was a dramatic season that season was set. Like,
yeah.
I think Lenny got attacked at Tynecastle. Was
yep.
What were you thinking when that happened?
When it happened, not like just what's going on? Why is they think of security reasons? Why is there no one there that's stopping this sort of stuff? But as the years have gone on, you start to think how ludicrous it is that being attacked, and then it was a continuous of threats to his life, bombs, packages, and. It was just a carnage few months where, no wonder we were, a bit in a depressive state.
Uh-huh.
Quite worrying times when you manage to go in for that. But he inspired me because of how well he stuck to his job, how he still maintained his shoulders back, chest out sort of attitude.
Uh-huh.
No matter what came through, what was attacking him off the park, he still had a fight in him and wanted us to win, and he knew how important winning was and how important Celtic was. So inspired me to go and play for not just Celtic, but for Neil Lennon himself.
There was two moments that cost Celtic the running that year. Sammy missed a penalty at Ibrox and the defeat to Inverness.
Yeah.
What do you think was more decisive out of the two?
Yeah, I mean, they're both...
You don't fancy the penalty?
I was on the penalties, but I was on the bench.
Right.
And I came on, and I thought, Sammy's on the ball, he wanted the pen. I think you scored a penalty there as well, didn't you?
Uh-huh.
Season before, same position. And I just thought, I don't want to be the guy that makes an issue of going over, I'll have it, give it here. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If I'd have started the game, 1,000,000%, I'd have took the penalty. I'm not saying I'd have scored it, but I thought, the guys that are starting games, they always know who's the designated penalty taker, so... I thought, I don't want to go over to Sammy. But again, the Inverness one was just, was that 3-2?
Uh-huh.
But it was 3-1 down, I think, we're about a minute ago. It was, it was fine margins them days.
How would Lenny be after a defeat like that, Inverness? Going mad?
Yeah, mental, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, it was his heart on his sleeve. Best guy to be around when you're winning, when you're losing, it makes it because he's been there as a player, he's been there as a manager, that it is 1 point, fine margins. Two, you think of a course of a season, 30-something games, where it comes down to two individual moments, really. It's, you know, 1 minute you're lifting a cup, next minute you've got your head in your hands. It just, it's real fine margins.
You didn't play as frequently in the second season.
No.
But you saved your first goal for the Rangers game.
I know, it come late on as well.
How did it feel scoring after a tough time at you?
It was, yeah. It was in and out of the team quite a bit.
Why do you think that was?
Injuries. We made some good signings that year. We had some good players. We were changing kind of formations. I think we were playing more defensively, kind of one striker. But again, there were people coming in and doing really well, so it was difficult for me to stay in the team. I think I got my chance at Tynecastle, got sent off, like a rash tackle. So yeah, frustrating year, but you know, if you ever get a chance to see my missus, just ask her what I said before that game. I said, I promise you, I swear to God, I'm going to score in this game. And yeah, it was perfect. And you know what, looking at the goal now, I probably took for granted our Hoops has actually seen my run, yeah, mm-hmm. Because he's done a wonderful bit of magic on the touchline, and he just got his head up for a split second. But me running through, and you know, Gary Hooper's probably one of the best players I've ever played with, like in terms of
that good, was he?
Oh, right? It was sensational, absolutely sensational. I don't think, I wouldn't say I don't think I've ever seen him miss a one-on-one. He did miss a one-on-one. It was St Johnstone away, and keeper saved it, and he went out for a corner. And I actually made a point of walking up to him and saying, "It's the first time I've ever seen you miss a one-on-one. What are you doing?"
He's all right.
Like, "Yeah, get away, geez. But yeah, it was breathtaking. Touch is awareness, and he looked inside, and I can remember looking, thinking, "Right, go on, play it, so I can run on." But actually, from every single camera angle that I've seen that goal, I still don't know how he's actually seeing me, because I've got a man here, I've got a man just
in front of you.
Yeah, any normal person would just think it's not on. But in my head, I thought, I'm on. He knew I was on, and he slid me through, and, you know, Bartley made a bit of a mess on it, and, Gregsy went down early.
Uh-huh. You seem to enjoy playing against Rangers, quite a good goal-scoring record. How were their games? How was it to score in their games?
Best games of your life, yeah. You know what it's like when you're playing big games? You always up your game, especially not being, you know, I wouldn't say I'm a world-class player, so to play at a world-class level, you've got to find that extra bit. Mm-hmm. World-class players do it every single week. Me not being a world-class player, it's very difficult for me to maintain every week. So, you know, you do have dips in form and dips in performances. But, yeah, the performances, especially Champions League and Old Firm games, always love find them. That extra bit, yeah.
Mm. See, when you said you were going through that tough time with Lenny, no playing, could you go and speak to Lenny and ask, and would he be fine with me, or would it?
Oh, no, we'd always have a bit of a thing.
Would you?
Yeah. Yeah, nothing, like, bad. I don't know, for instance, why are you bringing me off? Why are you taking me on? Why are you doing this? Mm-hmm. Why am I not playing?
And was he good that way?
Yeah, it was good that way, yeah. Uh-huh. So he'd say, this is happening, that's happening. I'm like, what are you saying there? What? Do you know what I mean? I always have my opinion, but I think it's one thing that Neil always, even though we had arguments off the park, it took away from him that, not that I stood up for myself, but I gave my point across. He says, I always admired that you actually stood up and told me what you believed in. And he always says, I knew you were wrong every time. I just thought that you sounded so convincing with the...
You made such a great point. Yeah.